Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gabaza, and for today, we are talking in the world of investments, and we're joined by the team from Liberty, and we're going to be having a discussion around index tracking around passive investments and, you know, some of the developments that are going on in that particular space. I'm at Liberty's, offices in is this Parktown or Bromfontein? Bromfontein, in Johannesburg, and joined by Hotso. Is it pronounced Tipa? Yes, who is the head of investment distribution and servicing over at Liberty Corporate Benefits. Hotso, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, cool. So let's get into the world of Liberty, but more specifically, Liberty Corporate Benefits. A lot of people tend to, we know Liberty as a large, financial services company in South Africa. There's an association with the Standard Bank Group and all that. But when we speak specifically about corporate benefits, what are we talking about?
Thank you. So when we speak about corporate benefits, we specifically are appealing and wanting to have conversations with institutions, companies, where there's an employer and an employee relationship, fundamentally. That forms the basis of which then benefits would arise. As you know, there's legislation in place in our country where employees need to be looked after, so to speak, by the employer through certain benefits that the employer would then put forward on the table when you're making an offer to an employee. One of these benefits that we are obviously chatting about today is that of investments, retirement benefits, as it pertains to those members of that fund within that company or corporate institution.
Mm. So in that light, where I guess you are helping to manage the investments that I guess corporates are essentially making on behalf of their employees, to offer, a number of, different services, in that bucket, right? What is the place of, index tracking? When I think of, indexes and index tracking, in my head, I'm immediately thinking of ETFs, exchange-traded funds, exchange-traded notes, and, that type of thing. That's where my mind goes. But as the professional, what are you guys talking about?
Certainly, index tracking is somewhat of not necessarily a departure, but a subsect that sometimes gets grouped with passive investing. As the word passive may allude, is the fact that, there is no form of active management done on a portfolio. It feels like what you're telling a member or an employer is that, you're putting your money away and we'll see you again in a couple of years. Index tracking is a bit of a departure from that, in that it is a cheaper form of investing through passive. In other words, you are not actively investing, but there are active, what we'd like to call active notes that are involved, insofar as making sure that the strategy that you have in place within your index tracking portfolio is one geared for the long-term objectives that are in place for a member. So yes, ETFs are probably the most popular, definitely, ones that have really, in a sense, blown up globally, to the point that now, as a passive investing as a whole, when we look at the assets that are allocated between passive and active investing, if we cast our eyes out to the West, to the US, there's more funds being allocated to passive investing as a whole, ETFs in the main, than you would find in your active investing space. So it shows that the appetite and need for simple, transparent, consistent, and easy to understand types of investing has really whetted the appetite
of
employers and employees. We know that employers, by and large, do not want to concern themselves or encumber themselves with the investment space. It's not their core. Their core focus is ensuring that what they offer their members is what is sustainable and suitable for a member, should they be able to offer it in such a manner that, you know, you reach one's retirement objectives and goals when it comes to retirement. And so that's where we'd like to play in the space of index tracking. We do ETFs. There's a whole technical process and approach and construction that happens in the background, which the details, believe me, even myself, it takes me a second sometimes when I reflect on the process that's involved in putting together some of these index tracking funds. But suffice to say, the track records speak for themselves. It's not just us in the market. It's a growing market here locally. Not as robust and as expansive in terms of breadth and depth as compared to the West, but certainly growing and almost growing in line with what's happening in Europe, where we're growing north of 10% a year in terms of index tracking allocations. But as I said, our markets here locally do not reflect what's happening out in the West as yet, still active investing. And we feel that, you know, we are not here to copy what happens all around the world. We need to have themes that are specific to South Africa's needs. And we believe in the world that we live in today, there's a place for both. Funny enough, we're talking about governments of national unity here. And I think investment strategies will really need to take more of that approach in that, you know, passive and active investing can coexist and probably should coexist so as to serve the retirement objectives as we look at it from one fund to another.
So let's dive deeper into, I guess, Liberty's position. My understanding is that you guys have been at this for about a decade now, recently celebrated 10 years, if I'm correct. What is the asset base looking like? I think the last number I saw was a 9 billion rand number. I don't know if that's the latest, but when we're talking about that, you know, what's been the progress made, you know, over that, you know, time period, whatever metrics you can share with us.
Cool. Yes, so as at the end of May, we reached the 9 billion rand mark. So yes, steadily growing. I recall when I joined the company just last year, we had just touched on just about 8 billion. So we have grown year from year, which is positive to see. We do believe that there is still greater opportunity. We look at some of our peers in the market and how they have grown. We still consider ourselves somewhat the younger of the siblings in the index tracking space. However, we do have big brothers, as you've alluded to before, in Standard Bank, you know, wholly owning the company now, which is Liberty. So we do believe that with the right channels and the right relationships that we have internally, as well as with our partners externally, your asset allocators in the marketplace, we are in a good position to have the right sort of conversations with their clients, you know, permitting obviously that the conversations go in the right direction. Yeah.
Mm. And when we think about it from that point of view, one of the things that I'm curious to understand is, I guess, the lay of the land when it comes to, I guess, yeah, what is Liberty's place in the market, right? At 9 billion, you know, where does that, I guess, place you guys in the market? Are there people that are allocating less? Are there people allocating more? Like, how are you guys placed compared to your compatriots in the industry?
I would definitely say we are not one that is at an area where we can compete with the larger brands when it comes to passive investing and index tracking at this stage. If we just look at pure assets that we manage, as I said, I think we're still a junior partner there, or at least market share isn't where we would like it to be. I mean, in active space, there are your large brands that are managing well over 300 billion rand in assets. So that gives you sort of like a picture. Some of them at a trillion and over. So we're talking about assets in South Africa as a whole our retirement industry space, I think that's why we're sitting at about 4 trillion rand that's available in the marketplace. So if we are participating in 9 billion rand of that, that gives you, I guess, an indication of just the potential that we have to capture more of the market. And putting our best foot forward, I think we've worked hard over the last 10 years to build a capability with all the good and bad, as you would with a 10-year journey, where we find ourselves now, I think, in a good position to be confident enough with the product, with enough capability and track record, where we can have meaningful conversations, not just the fact that we are putting ourselves as Liberty, but the concept that hits home to someone who's perhaps financially literate but wants to participate in the market. This would probably be the first area that they need to look at, is index tracking investing.
This one is slightly more technical, and I'm hoping you'll indulge me here. When we talk about the nine billion, right, and the fact that when you joined, it was closer to 8, you know, which means you guys have had a good amount of growth. The rough maths in my head says that's around 14 or 15% growth, you know, over that period. Actually, 12, almost 13%, you know, over that period to reach the 9 billion. Where's the growth coming from? Is it that these are new investments that are being made, you know, that reach us to get to the 9 billion? Or is it existing other portfolios that are being, I guess,
growing,
you know, in terms of allocation more towards the index tracking?
It's actually a bit of both. We did a study recently with our colleagues at One Invest, where it was shown that index tracking from a South African context in the last 5 years has grown at about 13% per annum. So there is external interest in terms of allocation. I think that's why I said it's a combination of both. Yeah. There's both an external interest in our growth from clients that have seen the performance and want to participate in this good news story, as well as those that are currently in the funds that have benefited from the growth and therefore allocated a bit more in their portfolio. So it's a combination of performance, which obviously increases AUM, as well as new allocations that we've gotten from existing and new clients. So we sort of match what's been happening in the market over the last 4 or 5 years in allocations to index tracking, where index tracking now is growing at about 13 to 14% per annum nationally.
And for people that are, people that are invested, right? Because someone might actually be listening to this, and at least from the beginning of the conversation, the relationship, at least the way I understand the relationship that Liberty has with the market, is that it tends to be, at least in your space, it's the corporates that are the client. How much of, I guess, the allocation decisions, or at least exposure to take on a product like this, is a decision being made by, let's say, the end member versus, I guess, you know, the corporate itself saying, actually, you know what, Khotso, we can see the growth you guys are having in index tracking. Perhaps you guys can allocate, you know, more of our total fund towards index tracking, versus the individual members themselves saying, I want, you know, more of my portfolio towards index tracking.
So a typical fund would have a board of trustees who make the decisions on their behalf. And these board of trustees would do member engagements and feedbacks with their members on an ongoing basis. And I think their feedback that they are getting, in which the FSCA has also noted, is that members want simplicity, low cost type of products where on a, you know, having to explain underperformance and what it means on a member statement where a member feels like we're contributing to something that we can't see how it's making me money. Am I getting anywhere closer to my objectives in terms of my retirement goals? There has been a thirst and a need for these type of products. I think that's why they've taken off substantially in the US particularly. So the decision therein lies with the Board of Trustees. We do know in our market that the Board of Trustees don't make these decisions alone. As these Board of Trustees compose of the same employees, right, and management. So they do need support and help through advisors and consultants who are then the astute, the financially literate, trained to be able to put together an investment strategy, or at least advise on an investment strategy, or consultant to assist the board in making these decisions. And drafting retirement objectives for members. So it is very collaborative. We are aware that it is just not one player on its own. And members are really having more of a say than they've done before. Members would have representatives on that, on those board of trustees through employee trustees, employee nominated trustees. So they are having more of a say on the board, and it's a collaboration between the employer and the employee. And in many cases, they would have an intermediary, like an advisor or an investment consultant, to help them traverse this very complicated landscape, which is retirement investing.
So maybe you could, I like what you're bringing up, you know, that engagement with with the corporates themselves, their trustees, but greater participation by the actual members. Maybe you could take us into your world a little bit, because at least to my understanding, you're one of the people that has to go out into the market and evangelize, for this type of thing.
I like that.
What is the environment like? Like, what are you fighting when you go out into the market? Is it competition? Is it education around, you know, at least even letting people know what this thing is like? What are you spending your time on in terms of trying to get more people into index tracking?
Look, competition is rife. Our market isn't as large and as robust as some of the areas in the developing world. Developed world. So you always have to find your sweet spot.
Yeah.
When you are evangelizing out in the market, because to separate yourself from the pack is far more difficult in a smaller market like ours, with a smaller market pool than you would find out in the West. So you need to differentiate yourself. You do not want to be picking fights because it is a smaller market, and burning bridges is never a good thing. We do work well together, though, I must say. So we differentiate ourselves in that we do not stray away from the fact that we are an insurer. So the products that we have to put forward have to be in line with the ethos that we espouse of care. An insurer needs to demonstrate care and being available, I think, to clients. Liberty is obviously known largely as an insurer. We want to know Liberty has paid our claims and paid our claims on time. And I think that's no different when it comes to investing. You need to be on time, available, transparent with your members, and simple in how you approach them, and not try, I guess, for lack of a better word, bamboozle clients with complicated type products, because it is really something that is part of our principles of care. And that if we want to look after you, look after your health, look after your family, we need to espouse the same values when it comes to the money that you've put away, when it comes to retirement. So we do not want to stray away from those principles. It's easy to say that, I know. I think demonstrating that through an index tracking proposition that is, I would like to think, one of the cheapest in the market, and the performance is comparable to some of the best investment houses in the country. consistent performance over a very long period of time. So those are the two things that I think any investor cares about is, are you cheap enough? But cheap doesn't mean you must be low quality. And low quality for me is the consistency of your returns and your availability to talk to me about where am I and walking with me in my journey to retirement.
It's a very interesting space that you seem to, you know, find yourselves. And I can imagine the types of engagements. I would love to be a fly.
You can come with me. They can be very hostile. At times. But you're dealing with people's money, right? Yes. When you're dealing with my money and I've been working for 20, 30 years, I don't want you to come back to me and tell me that, oh, I don't think you're in the right position to think about retirement. You need to work for another 50 years before we can talk about that. We know that South Africa's got very low levels of savings. We know that there's enough literature out there that has told us that less than 10% of South Africans can actually afford to retire. So the little dent that we can push in trying to make sure that we help those who still have that idea of wanting to retire when the time comes, we need to be able to put the right kind of solution that, you know, consistent performance and low cost, because we know what costs can do to your performance. Paying fees away means that you get less of the performance that you're being told about, which means that it can take years out of your savings. So we are very, very diligent in our solutions drive. And we need to ensure that as far as we can, we want to espouse and address the problems that the country has, you know, where our grannies and grandpas retire. And then after 3 years, we find them in that SASSA line, where this person has worked and toiled for 30 years, 40 years of their lives, yet they don't have enough to sustain them after retirement. Products going forward need, and trustees going forward need to obviously think about that quite carefully. And costs have, at least for the last 5 to 7 years, been a hot talking point in our space, because everyone is aware, I guess, of what it means for one's bottom line to pay away fees.
You know, because we are on this theme of the bigger picture in the country, and you know, rates of savings and retirement and that type of thing, what does South Africa's it feels an obvious question, but still keen to pick your brain on it. What do the low levels of saving in the country do, I guess, to the types of assets or the level of assets that are available to be invested in the market?
Wow. You got me thinking about bigger picture now after watching Mr. Nono Litele's documentary and his talk about the bigger picture. They do erode one's value, asset value. The impact is that, you know, quite simply, if you have 10 rand to invest every month, you're actually not investing 10 rand because you have to pay 1 rand away of that. I'm being, you know, very facetious here, but I mean, you have to pay away 1 rand, let's say theoretically, or a fraction of that every month. So you're not actually investing 10 rand because a portion of that, a fraction of that has to go towards paying fees, regardless of whether there's performance or not. So we have a very large market, as I said, 4 trillion rand, that is there to capture, but a large portion of that is managed in the active space. And I think there needs to be a bit of a balance there. I think there needs to be a bit of a symbiosis, I think, that our country needs to go through, because we know that the government is encumbered with working class people. We're not even talking about those that do not have the opportunity to work, those that have had the opportunity to work, that still come out the worst at the end of their working lives. So there is a large impact. I wish I had the numbers for you in terms of what is paid away in fees every month, but it's a large portion that is paid away in fees. So you know, we always harp on about fees and fees this and fees that, but performance as well is important, because when performance is not good and you're still paying fees, it exacerbates the level of underperformance that a member experiences on any given month. When you are -4, you're actually -5%, because A portion of that is paid, you still have to pay a wing fee. So it exacerbates the story and makes it difficult for a member to, member's share of fund to rebound on a month-by-month basis when you're paying away fees. So fees, consistent performance, good track record, having someone that you can rely and trust that is available. We make ourselves available to our clients. We cannot evangelize on what strategy, you know, funds can take. We obviously have a view on what we feel they should, but we feel that, you know, with the right kind of relationships with your large in consultants out in the market, we can have a shared view and be part of, rather than take over a, be part of the strategy in terms of at least, you know, cushioning that cost blow for a member in the end. Yeah.
No, it's a very interesting, I guess, space to be in, and it's great to engage with, you know, people like yourselves that have a view of actually what's happening on the ground, because we often hear of these big picture concepts and they sound a bit abstract. South Africa is a country of spenders and not savers, and you know, the savings rate isn't that high. But when you then think about, okay, cool, what does that, I guess, mean for, I guess, retirement? Let's take retirement funds, because that's just a piece, you know, of the investment landscape, albeit a large piece of the investment landscape, even around the world. We know that retirement funds tend to drive, you know, a lot of activity, you know, in the
economies.
Yeah, in the economies and in the market. And one just wonders to say, if there were more funds available, you know, what could be the power of the South African market or the South African investor if, you know, there was more money available, you know, to that. And I guess if you're investing more, I'm hoping that the proportion of your fees and all of that stuff is lower, you know, depending on, you know, the amount of money that a person has to invest. Two things that I guess we tend to touch base on when we're talking with people in the investment space, and I guess within the context of this index tracking conversation, where is offshore, you know, the offshore debate located, you know, in this context?
Just backtracking on what you'd actually said, there's a very I thought you were going to lead me into a very controversial topic of prescribed assets. In how the investment market can play a greater role in the economic prosperity of a country. And I think, you know, that debate can be another for another day. We can have it over a beer or two, but I think it's a very pertinent one. We are not the first country to have this debate. It was actually had during apartheid, as you would know, and it has been had all over the world. You go to Saudi Arabia, Norway, Sweden. It's a very, very well-known discussion, because those are funds. As we said, if you can't afford to retire, at least have the kind of support, you know, that you've been investing in to support you when it comes to retirement. That's better roads, infrastructure, medical access, and things like that. So I think, you know, when we look at asset allocation, you know, we are guided by Regulation 28, as you would know, the regulation guidelines. And we believe that we have benefited from what many may view as a conservative outlook on offshore allocation. We are sitting conservatively, I would say, below where the mean or the peers may sit. There has been obviously a lot of discussion since Regulation 28 has been revised to allow one to go 45% offshore, or funds to go 45% offshore. We haven't really played that much in that space as yet. We don't feel that it is warranted at this stage. There hasn't been, I guess, enough information. Our investment conviction and philosophy isn't really saying to us at this point that we need to go there. However, we do take cognizance of the fact that we believe that we are still underweight to perhaps where the mean should be. I think we're probably sitting at about 7 to 8% below where we probably want to be, in terms of percentage points below where we probably want to be from a offshore allocation.
What's the industry average for us non-investment
people? Yeah. Depending on which fund fact sheet you want to look at, but it's anything between 35% to 40%. Okay. Some are more aggressive, 40% to 45%. Some of our peers have even got special funds that have got full allocation, which is 45% to offshore. We believe that that's just too much of a concentration risk. And if, as we know, whatever happens in America, America sneezes, everyone gets the flu. You have a large allocation to dollar assets, which you just don't want to be playing at that high level. But I think anything between 35% to 38%, I think, is probably a healthy allocation.
Yeah.
You also have to kind of be patriotic, I think, in terms of your balanced view. There are still local opportunities.
Yeah.
There's enough literature telling us that our markets are very cheap at these levels. We have gone through some of these companies are obviously have relationships with the parastatals, like your Transnets for your miners that need to get raw materials to the harbors using our railways. We've had troubles with Eskom and load shedding and how that's impacted local businesses. So a better government policy execution would naturally result in better outcomes, I think, for our local economy. Mm-hmm. And we know that the markets are an extension of the economy, a proxy of the economy in many ways. So we believe that there's still local opportunity. I know I'm a bit of a patriot there. And I think, we all share the view internally that we must be balanced. Take those offshore opportunities, but always keep an eye on what's happening here locally, because I think there's still a good news story to tell. And we do not want to miss out on that.
Yeah, no, I think I do agree with you on that. On that point, I do see huge rationale in the fact that if more money was to stay in the local market, it would hopefully spur a little more activity on the local market. Albeit the JSE and its accompanying markets, whether you're talking bonds, you're talking equity side, whatever it is, they're the most liquid on the continent. We can't, forgo that particular fact, but it could be, at a higher plane. And when I think about some of the takeover attempts on certain local assets, the one that's easy for me to just point at is MultiChoice. Yeah. It's wild to me that we are existing in a world where company, the size and magnitude of MultiChoice can be taken over for less than 3 billion euros, right? It's probably an asset that could be much, exponentially worth more than that. But you also need to have markets that are conducive, for the type of growth to happen. So I completely take that point.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. I see you're a bit of a patriot yourself. it can never be lost upon us that Africa is the next growth story. I think growth going forward, at least for the next 50 years, is going to be in Asia as well as Africa, particularly in Africa, because we've got a younger populace. So which means that we've got a more robust, available labor market. We've got infrastructure that is backdated. There's a huge backlog on infrastructure. There are areas on our continent that have got exceptional levels of education that we know, particularly out in West Africa. So MultiChoice was that good news story for Africa.
Yeah.
Where that takeover made you realize that no local company is untouchable. And it is now a rand hedge stock in a way. But we do believe that the opportunity is there for the smaller cap companies. I think your smaller cap companies to start playing a large role. They are dependent, I guess, unfortunately, on how the economy grows. And I think economy growing anything north of 3%, a year is more than enough to at least start spurring on that African story. We know how crucial South Africa is to that African story. So we had no illusion that, you know, foreigners, when we leave the continent, are very interested in African resources. They will continue to be. We're talking about semiconductors now, and we know the race for the raw earth materials, rare earth materials. So you're gonna see more stories like this, unfortunately. But I do believe that, you know, the resilience of our people is reflected in our everyday lives. You see it all the time on TV, and the same people are running companies, they're running local companies. So there will always be an opportunity for our markets to grow. I know that there's been a worry around the contraction of the JSE with more companies delisting, which we know about. But we've seen that kind of stabilize a bit now, because there's that new re-established hope where companies do want access to this capital for growth. And growth means absorbing labor. So the African story is still yet to be told, I believe.
No, I certainly have to agree with you on that point. And I think that's a nice segue for us to end today's conversation on what I probably think is the biggest circular theme around the world. I primarily look at technology, media, and telecoms, so it's a big theme in my world, but I do know that across the board, whether you're a fund manager or whether you're a farmer, everyone and their cat is talking about artificial intelligence or AI. Is this affecting your world, in the world of either retirement funds or index tracking in any way?
Yes, most certainly. The future means that the information that was not so readily available a few years ago, that you needed to make asset allocation decisions upon, becomes more readily available. We do not have to wait for company results or every other interim. We have on our cell phones, through social media, we have things that may impact on a daily basis company's share price. So the readily availability, the readiness and the availability of information compared to 10, 15 years ago has really changed the game. It's made the asset manager or the investment manager one that needs to spend more time in dissecting the information that you get. Machines are more powerful now in terms of processing information. A company will tell you that they're forecasting earnings to grow by X, but you would know that in your inputs that your AI machine would have made on your behalf, you would have already had predictions. We know investment managers, some of our peers are using that now to predict how companies will grow based on their ESG factors, how they will grow when they absorb 10% more of labor than they have in the previous year, what it means for their end result. If they where are they in their execution, perhaps when you look at jurisdictions, if they're wanting to start a plant in Central Africa and the themes around Central Africa, you don't have to travel to Central Africa to understand the themes of what's at play at Central Africa anymore. They're available to you on your laptop. You'll get all the information at a touch of a button. So the information that you use to make decisions is so more readily available now because the matrices are so easily available, where you ask yourself, what has been the growth rate in Rwanda over the last 5 years, and what does that mean for one who wants to get into telecoms? Who are the telecom players? You no longer have to fly to Rwanda to do that. You can do that from the comfort of your home. Technology will continue to play a major role. It will make the journey for the member even more better, because the member will be more empowered to understand what they are investing in. They will have readily available information that may contradict something that they heard from their consultant, their advisor, or their investment manager when they told them that we predict perhaps this will happen. They don't have to wait for those meetings to confirm whether something happened or not. They'll have that available on their phones, TVs, and things like laptops and things of that nature. So technology will definitely keep the industry honest. It will weed out those that are the pretenders. And it will mean that there's a better stream and flow of information. We know there's the Donald Trump era of deep fake and fake news, and so that will have to be filtered out as we go, because we don't think that will that will stop being a part of our lives. And so you need to be more astute in the information that you get, and sifting out the noise from the actual news, and making sure that the inputs that you put in into your machine learnings and your high-powered machines are in line with the goals that that you've set out for your company, as well as the clients that you service.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion, you know, just talking to Khotso about what's going on in the world of index tracking. You know, we did veer off the course a little bit, you know, just to explore other areas, you know, in the world. But some of the key things that, you know, he was talking about is to say that index tracking, you know, as a subset of what people consider to be passive investing, is growing, you know, around the world, and it's also growing in South Africa as well. I think he said that the local industry is growing at roughly 13-15%, you know, somewhere there, and their own growth is in line, you know, with you know, some of those numbers. Still. I can't remember the exact words that he used, but he said that they are, in essence, an up-and-comer in that particular space, but still quite bullish about the opportunity, you know, that exists in that particular space when it comes to index tracking as a part of, you know, portfolios for retirement funds. And the fact that globally we have, you know, seen a huge move towards more of passive allocations versus active allocations. But in South Africa, we still have, you know, a paradigm that is flipped in the opposite direction. And I guess the hope is that over time, you know, we will, you know, have strike a bit more of a balance between the two. Also, just talking about the fact that we see a lot of engagement, you know, whether it's members or whether it's the corporates themselves, there's still a little bit of tension that needs to be worked through to get more and more people first to be educated about what's going on in the index tracking space, and then secondly, to get those people to want their money to be allocated, you know, in those particular spaces. And then also just talking about you know, what's going on in the rest of the world, you know, when it comes to, just now we just spoke about AI, also talking about offshore investing, what is this, what is the place of retirement funds as a tool, you know, to spur some type of economic and market activity. And, you know, that probably could be a whole conversation, you know, on its own, ending off talking about AI and the fact that that's likely to be a tool that will be used by, that is already being used by investment managers to make better capital allocation decisions. But it does give, you know, the people on whose behalf money is being allocated access to better information about some of the decisions that are being made out there. Ultimately, when we talk about index tracking and, you know, some of these similar products, it's the simplicity and it's the affordability factors that are driving, you know, a lot of the growth that we see in the space. So that's been it. It has been a really great one. We were in discussion with Khotso Tipa, who is Head of Investment Distribution and Servicing over at Liberty Corporate Benefits. Khotso, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. This has been swell. Wish we could do it again. Thank you so much. This was a great opportunity.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.